All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to this POL committee meeting this August 17, 2023. I have a few announcements before we start. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or a Zoom webinar link. In the event there's a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, please click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak, unmute, and when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, I will announce when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by last two digits of your phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. If there's a public present, which there is, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to the admin to expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comment. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. And then we will come to a consensus to move an item to board for consideration. And we will consider a consent calendar when possible. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. We have all committee members present tonight. And we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Armitage, would you like to lead us in that?
Sure. Raise hand. Place your right hand over your heart. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Alrighty. I have no public comment cards on non-agenda items. Do we have anybody on the public that wants to comment or not? Okay. All right, we will move on to item 3, legislative consultant reports. And the first one is Pete, is it Evett? Hi, Pete. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
It's Evett. So it's E-V-I-C-H.
Okay. From Vanscoyth Associates. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again as well. And I know it's been for the director sometimes provided the federal report to the committee. So I guess for those directors who I have not yet had the pleasure to meet, I work with Jeff as part of the Vanscoyth Associates team for SCV Water. I've been with VSA as a principal at the firm since 2003 and plus year history working with Western Water Agency. So anyway, it's good to be here with you this evening to provide the report on Jeff Stead. I know you heard the good news from Jeff last month that $2.1 million was included in the FY24 House Interior Appropriations Bill for SCV Water's S-Wells PFAS Treatment Initiative. And so the inclusion of this funding, of course, is thanks to Representative Garcia, who championed this high priority request on behalf of the agency. The House Appropriations Committee did advance that bill where the funding was included on July 19th. On the Senate side, the Senate Appropriations Committee release and pass out its version of the FY24 Interior EPA appropriations measure, and that was on July 27th. However, that bill contained a total of 5 EPA SAG earmarks. This is the kind of earmark that Yes, Wells earmark is for the entire state of California. And then looking over those five, we noted that four out of the five were for water systems that have a significant disadvantaged community population. So securing an EPA STAG earmark through the senators is a challenging endeavor given the limited pool. But just from a from an appropriations process perspective, what's important to I think underscore is by having funding for the project in the House bill, it puts SCV Water on a glide path to securing that funding and a final compromise measure should this Congress be able to achieve that objective of getting to that final bill. Before Congress departed on July 28th for its extended summer recess period, neither the House nor the Senate saw much floor action on those 12 annual appropriations measures. To date, the Senate has yet to bring any of those FY24 appropriations bills to the floor, and the House was only able to pass one of the 12. So given that the current federal fiscal year ends on September 30th, Congress will need to enact a short-term continuing resolution called CR to give each chamber time to pass their respective appropriations bills and then conference out a final compromise measure. While that seems simple enough on paper, it's unfortunately won't be that easy. A number of House GOP members on the party's right flank have stressed that they will only vote for bills that set funding at fiscal FY22 levels, and the CR would keep spending at the same level as 23. Additionally, there's going to be pressure to tack on roughly $40 billion in emergency funding associated with border issues, disaster relief for the Maui fires, the war in Ukraine. So that will add a further hurdle in the effort to pass a stopgap in late September, early October. But that stated, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer came out earlier this week articulating their commitment to enacting a CR soon after federal lawmakers returned to D.C. in mid-September. And McCarthy and Schumer's ideal CR time length would be one that lasts until early December. Really, at this point, though, it just would be a fool's errand to try and guess with any degree of certitude how this will all shake out as the year moves on. For SCV Water, as it relates to the $2.1 million for the S-Well project, you're going to just be pulling for Congress and the White House to ultimately sort out a path that entails a final FY24 interior appropriations measure, makes it across the finish line. But just more to come on how this kind of pending drama is going to progress at next month's report. So shifting gears to another issue of importance, which is PFAS. I know that Jeff has also mentioned to you that the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee is considering taking up a PFAS bill. The committee's leaders are hoping they can be ready to mark up a bill sometime shortly after Congress returns in September. What's holding up that legislation is language which would provide a PFAS-related CERCLA exemption for passive receivers like SCV Water. I think the initial hope was that such language could be achieved in a bipartisan fashion on the committee, but they haven't been able to get there yet, and whether they ultimately do is still an open question. But we'll certainly be keeping you posted on the progress of that measure, given SCV Water's keen interest in seeing Congress provide a PFAS CERCLA exemption for water providers. And just finally, from in terms of my oral report, we alerted SCV Water's executive team to a few Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Grant notice of funding opportunities, which were released on August 7th. And this included another round of funding for drought resiliency related projects. The Water Smart Drought Resiliency Program was the reclamation grant stream in which SCV Water secured $5 million for its S-Wells PFAS treatment initiative, which was announced through an award process late last year. Also, in the coming months, we're going to expect to see Reclamation release another notice of funding opportunity for its Title 16 program, which funds water recycling and water reuse projects. As SCV Water has an approved Title 16 recycling water project feasibility study, that project is eligible to apply for federal funding once the grant notice is released. And so we'll continue to work with the SCV Water team in an effort to align these opportunities with the agency's priorities. In addition to what's on the written report and what I've stated here, or anything else that's on your mind, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have of me. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Pete. Do we have any questions from directors? Oh, well, I have no written cards. Do we have anybody online with a public comment?
No.
Okay. Now, thank you for that. Do we have any director comments?
Yes. Thank you. First of all, Mr. Evich, nice to meet you. I haven't had the chance to meet you yet, so it's nice to have somebody different. We always appreciate Mr. Bowman, but I like meeting new people too, so this is nice. So thank you for your report. A few questions. One is, and I'm sorry if I missed it, there was mention of the request, the $2.1 million request through Congressman Garcia's office. So that's on the House side. And I know Mr. Bowman was telling us that there were requests that were put in through Senator Feinstein's and Senator Padilla's offices as well, but there was no mention of it here. But maybe I'm not remembering something. So if you could remind me of what's going on with those.
Yeah, and we apologize. It probably should have been in the written report as well. Yeah, I think I may have mentioned that yes, the Senate Appropriations Committee did release and pass out its version of the FY24 Interior Appropriations Measure on July 27th. What occurred with that bill is that there were only five EPA stag earmarks, that's the stag earmark is what SCV Water received through for the S-Well project. And so there were only five of those for the entire state of California. And then when we looked over those five, four out of the five were water systems that were significantly disadvantaged community populations. So yes, I know that Senator Padilla, and I'm trying to remember if Senator Feinstein also advanced that project. I know that at least Senator Padilla did. But given the limited number of projects, we did not find ourselves in that bill.
Okay.
And so what I wanted to kind of say from that perspective and in my remarks was that just from the appropriations process perspective, I think what's important is that project was on the House side, because that really puts SCV Water on a glide path to securing that funding should we receive a final compromise version. So I know sometimes if you want to try to get in both bills and it will look nice, but historically what we've seen with these bills is if you're in one of the House or Senate bills, you're going to, so far we've seen the total amount of that funding in the final bill. I can't guarantee that's going to be the case this go around, but we're certainly on a path should Congress get to that final bill to be in there because we're in the House bill. But yeah, that's the Senate is just so significantly tough. I don't want to belabor this, but just I think really what goes on the appropriation side, House and Senate, is so you get the House members get 15 total requests that they can submit. And senators can request as many, but I think what you see oftentimes is that the small states who don't have as many members of Congress, because they have 15 total requests throughout all of the appropriations bills. What they do then is give those senators more of the earmarks because they only have one or two House members, say like Alaska only has one member. So you end up seeing a lot more of these stag earmarks in Alaska and you're scratching your head. But the reason is that the House, there's only one House member. And so I think that's why they do that. In California, with as many House seats as they are, they just don't give the senators that many tags. So sorry if that was too long-winded of a response to your question.
No, that's interesting. Thank you. So we don't get credit for losing. Didn't we just lose a Congress member in California? Okay. Then I want to say thank you for the heads up on the additional possible grant opportunities. That's always really great to hear. So thank you for sharing that. For the water recycling, you said there's potential funding coming for water recycling. And I know I've recently had a conversation with Heather Miranda through the city of Santa Clarita, and she had mentioned that both of our water reclamation plants are at capacity, right? Which limits our ability to recycle water. So I don't know how that's like a whole separate conversation to kind of learn more about that. But my question is there collaboration? Like, is it a footprint issue? Like, they cannot grow any bigger, or is it they just would need more funding to get bigger to provide more recycled water?
It's a layered question. First, I'll start off by saying that the Saugus footprint is limited. So the sewage treatment facility, recycled water facility that's in the middle of the town is built out because of footprint constraints. The Valencia plant has room to grow. So that plant will grow and is projected to grow. So as homes are built, their system is interconnected, so they can actually flow water from Saugus to Valencia.
Okay.
And so that system is there and available. The challenge on recycling the water has to do with taking the water out of the river. There's a permitting constraint that happens when water goes into a water course, and it's been in there for a while, and the environment starts to like it or not, but it's in there. And so you have to go through what's called a 1211 permitting process to remove that water out of the river. And that's a really hard threshold to get through because of the way that process is set up. What we had done was the new drop, that's where the new drop piece comes in, right? Is that as new development grows, we are calculating flows that would go to the sewage treatment facility, and we are able to capture those in our calculation and use those. So we have approval to do that through the state board. So that's kind of the process, but I'm happy to talk to you offline.
Yeah, we can talk about more about it. Just wondering if there's collaboration happening with sanitation on receiving funds as well going forward. So, okay. And then the last thing, I guess this is more for, maybe I'll just reserve this for when Mr. Bowman's back, but I was just thinking that it would be nice to add at the end of the reports a section similar to the state report where it has important dates and deadlines for the rest of the legislative calendar coming up. Because as I was reading this, I was like, oh, I wonder what's coming up next. So it just a little logistical ask, I guess, on that.
Sure. Sure.
All right. That's it. Thank you so much.
Yes, we can do that. Thank you, Director. Okay.
You're welcome. Any other director questions or comments?
No.
All right. Thank you for the update, Pete.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. And I'll probably just stay on to listen to the rest. So I'll take myself off camera and I'll be here if there's any other questions. But thank you. Good seeing you all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And next, we'll move to item 3.2, presented by Dennis Albiani and Annalee Aiken from Cal Advocates.
Hello, good day. Thank you. There we go. Thank you for the opportunity to come speak again tonight. It's always a pleasure, and we appreciate the opportunity. So with that, just a little overview of where we are in the legislative session. We are in our last month, and actually about 3.5 weeks left. And so things are moving very quickly. There are, so bills are in their kind of their last hearing before they head to the floor. The appropriations, most are on the suspense file. If they have any costs, they go into the Senate and Assembly suspense files. August 23rd, they will clean those out. So next Thursday, we'll get those files cleaned out. Some will pass. Some will be what's called held on suspense. And so then they go to the floor, and it's all out chaos from there on through. And so that's what we're preparing for right now. And a lot of negotiations, lots of amendments going back and forth on all these different bills. In fact, since we were on there and Pete was giving his report, we got some updates and updated language on a Dodd bill on SB3, which is how that we do, you know, work out systems and divert billing and payments for folks who may be behind on their utility bill. But anyways, we'll get through that. So the point in that is there's just a lot of activity going on right now. Anna Lee later in the report will talk about the bonds. So, and go through all that and where they are and that. So that's going to be a major part of our report. But before we get there, I thought there was value in touching on a few bills that we've been following very closely. And the first one is 1567, which is, or excuse me, 1594. 1594 is the utilities truck, which would give, you know, the utility trucks that are out to repair water infrastructure and a few other infrastructure areas, the same treatment as how we're treating first responders, so that when there is an emergency, then they could, you know, gas or diesel or biodiesel would all be alternatives that could be used rather than electricity, since it could be an issue if the, you know, emergency lasts long enough that you couldn't recharge your utility vehicles and that. So that's the 1594. And that's a significant issue, Garcia, that's moving along. We'll find out about that on August 23rd. It was heard earlier this week, put on suspense. And I talked to Mr. Garcia today, just in passing, and he felt pretty comfortable that things are moving forward. And so that's with that bill. Earlier this year, we talked a lot about water rights. It kind of sucked up a lot of the oxygen in the air from that. The two bills that were the biggest concern are held in the committee are two-year bills. But the other bill that's moving is SB 389. Lots of conversations on that bill about essentially really reporting, identifying the water right, you know, and quantifying that and how it's being used. And so that's really the conversation there. I think a lot of people are hopeful that everybody could get to at least neutral, if not there. But we are, I think that the amendments, it's making great progress and feel pretty comfortable that we can get there on that. And we'll be sending the amendments up to Steve as they come through for review and that. So that bill is progressing, and it looks like it will make it to the system. Although I did see that yesterday that the Department of Finance took an opposition on that. So they're going to be negotiating. Talked to Tina Andolina earlier this week. They're going to be negotiating with the governor's office, figuring out how to get, you know, the finance concerns addressed. Then the only other one is AB 1631. Ms. Schiavo, our local folks on water resources permits, on applications that for mining operations, that we've testified on this. It's also on the Senate Appropriations Committee, and we hope that comes off, and then it would be onto the floor, and we could help, you know, get that off the floor. So those are some of the major bills. With that, I'll hand it over to Anna Lee, who could talk mostly about the bonds, which is really a very active conversation right now.
Thanks, Dennis, and good evening, directors. Thank you for having us here tonight. As Dennis said, there's still a lot of ongoing discussions, amendments taking place, even though we do only have a few weeks left. And as of right now, there are four bills still alive, which contain provisions that could be included in a drought and infrastructure bond measure that Californians would see on their ballots in 2024 if it's passed and signed. As of now, they range in size from $4.5 billion to $16.5 billion, and the range of what is included, all of them, varies greatly too. So there's two that are more comprehensive and contain everything from recycling, as mentioned earlier, wildfire resistance, and are more climate focused. And then there are two which are really just focused on flood protection. It looks as of right now that Senator Allen's SB 867 is the most likely to actually contain the provisions that voters will see on their ballots. But it's still definitely subject to amendments, and then also even subject to some of the things being pulled from the other bond measures into that. So if there's language in one of the other three, that could always be amended into this bill too. Another big change that we're hoping for is some of the numbers in that one to increase. It is totaled at $15.5 billion right now, but a lot of the asks from the water community are in it, but just not as much. An example is dam safety is only at $400 million in that one right now, but Aqua has asked for $850 million. A couple other points about the bonds. The question remains on whether we'll see it in March or November. The governor has stated support for it in general, even back to his budget remarks, as some of the funding that was put off from the budget to deal with the deficit. He was talking about how that would be in a bond measure. So we've heard support from the administration, but now there's a mental health bond that he's been very vocal about, a school bond, a possible housing bond, and at least the mental health one we're expected to see in March. So the question remains, what will voters have the appetite for? As of now, based on polling, people expect high hopes that an infrastructure bond and a school bond and a mental health bond can all pass in March. But the question really remains. Dennis and I met with the lead staff for two of the two more comprehensive bills earlier this week, as well as Senator Min, the chair of the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee, and his staff. And the takeaways were common that even legislative leaders are not sure what the governor is going to want with this and when he wants it and how big it will actually be. So if a $15 billion bond has to be reduced to $10 billion, we will be advocating not to cut any of your priorities in related to water. So to note, based on Santa Clarita Valley and what we might want to see in a bond, two of them right now contain funds for invasive species cleanup. So that's the two more comprehensive ones. Senator Allen's SB 867 contains $25 million. And then Assemblyman Garcia's, the comprehensive one from the Assembly, contains $20 million. And that's not tied to coastal invasive species. So we're hoping that maybe pockets of that could be used for Arundo. So that's to note. And then as of right now, too, regarding PFAS, only one of the bonds currently has funding to address PFAS that would go through the Water Board, and that is AB 1567, so the Assembly's one. But as I said, we could still see some movement and maybe PFAS cleanup in the Senator Allen's bill, too. And then, as I said, recycling. The two more comprehensive bonds, they each have $300 million that would go through the Water Board for water recycling projects. So there's the potential for a lot of opportunity for increased fundings for some of our priorities. So we're going to continue to be engaged. Aqua has a group that we're engaged with. We met with them earlier today and this week about just really making sure that this stays top of mind for legislators and that the water related infrastructure, people really know how important that is too. So that includes my portion related to the bonds. If anyone has questions or if Dennis has anything.
The only thing I would add on that is when we met with some of the lead staff, they're like, well, what have you heard?
And yeah.
Man, he's like, well, are you, do you think they're going to do this? And so it was very clear that the governor has not engaged. He has not engaged yet. And there's time, but, starts to wind down a little bit to get the language right and things like that. If it's not done. And I mentioned on August 23rd, that the legislature's, turns to all the bills on suspense. And really needs to get those cleared off of, the second house. And then they go back to the first house for concurrence if there's been any amendments. So there's a lot of work to be done between August 23rd and September 14th. So if they don't engage, that's obvious. Okay, we're looking at the November ballot. If they do in that, and they've obviously identified homelessness and mental health as a significant issue, you know, political issue as well, as we all know, budget and financing. And he rolled out a kind of a mental health proposal earlier this week. Last week, but during the session, the break. And so anyways, those are, you know, it's not clear where everybody is, but we did find it funny when they were asking us, and you know, we met with them, but we had been obviously talking to people. And so, you know, we shared with them what we knew, but it was still a limited.
Great. Thank you. I have no public comment cards on this. Do we have any online public comment?
There's no one.
All right. Any director comments?
One of my questions might be answered.
Okay. All right. So first of all, thank you for your presentation, Ms. Aiken and Mr. Albiani. Always appreciate it. Couple questions and a comment. So who ultimately determines when the bonds go onto the ballot?
Well, it's a 2/3 vote by both houses.
Okay.
And it says it in the bond. Actually, the language says when it'll be go in front. The most limiting factor is timing. You know, they actually have to print up ballots. And this is an awkward time because the there's going to be a March primary. Usually they're June. Mm-hmm. So you have time to come back from break, start in January, and you could get it. Let's say if you passed it by March 15th, they could get the ballots printed. They can get the, you know, there's different, you know, there's proponents put their arguments on it, opponents put their arguments on it, and there's time lines to do that. So they just have to work backwards from when they have to mail out the ballots by law. But because they moved up the primary, it's actually this year we have to get it passed by the legislature, and so it can get on the March ballot. So it's you know, and then the powers that be, meaning, you know, the big three, it's a 2/3 vote bill. So, but obviously we have a super majority. So the, you know, the Dems do that. They will probably be searching for some Republican votes. And so, you know, those folks all kind of get together with the governor and polling and that, and they look at priorities. I think the real concern in March is, will they pass, you know, $30 billion in one ballot or even bigger, you know, so they want to kind of stage that out.
Okay. Thank you. And then you mentioned the Dodd bill kind of in your intro, but then didn't really hear anything about it. And I'm sorry, I probably should have read up on the update in the packet you gave us, but honestly, I've kind of ignored that bill because the fiasco we went through last year and we kind of created our own process. And so I haven't really been paying attention to it, but something you said in the intro kind of piqued my interest. So could you give us a little bit of an update on that?
So Senator Dodd, if you remember, and I think you're well versed in this, yeah, has been about, you know, trying to find an opportunity for, you know, ratepayer assistance, for lack of a better term. And some of, you know, our constitution, you know, prohibits doing too much to any one entity, you know, based on benefit and all that stuff. I think you guys understand. But so that we had those two bills. Then this year, this is really they focused on it, kind of sat as a what we call a spot bill, placeholder. So they've put in it planning on, you know, districts having to have a deferral process on a ratepayer. If you can't make your payments, how do you defer payments? And then some ways on how you get, you know, paid over time. There were some, just the amendments, honestly, I was just looking at them, you know, when Pete was talking, reading them quickly because they came in during his presentation. I mentioned, looks like they're just trying to tighten up some of the restitution language. And to make sure that even a deferral doesn't mean that the person doesn't pay. It means that it's deferred for a period of time. and they still would need to pay over time, and how that works. And so that's part of that. Anything I missed, Annalie, on that?
No, and I was just skimming the recent amendments before too, but I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. And again, these are proposed amendments, like being,
right, you know, yes, being not sent in out print
to
the yet.
Working groups and saying, hey, what do you guys think? And so we'll get those over to staff and Steve and everybody, you know, when this is over.
Thanks. And then the last thing I'll say is just a comment. I was glad to read in the Aqua SLC update that there is favor, if amended, for Assemblywoman Friedman's bill AB 1572. On prohibiting the use of potable water for the irrigation of non-functional turf on commercial, industrial, and institutional property. So I was glad to read that. Thank you. That's it.
I had a question about that one.
Okay.
I was wondering, thank you so much for your presentation, but I was wondering why were cemeteries exempt? Is it like a more emotional thing that we feel bad about not watering lawns at cemeteries? I mean, they're non-functional turf. I'm just wondering if that's the reason.
Is it non-functional?
Well, I think some people would consider them functional. I don't know.
If it's excluding cemeteries, then it's considered non-functional by definition.
I honestly don't know the politics behind that specifically, but I'll just give you an example. The one that's closest to my, not my house, but the freeway where I get off is called East Lawn. You know,
Forest Lawn.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. They have a lot of, I don't know what.
Yeah, I think people view that as, you know, part of the line to rest of folks. But again, I do not know the specifics. We don't represent the cemetery folks. Annalie, do you have any background on that?
I actually don't have any background on that specifically, but I would guess that our like instincts are right for just how it's viewed, and they might not want to get into any debate on whether cemeteries are functional or non-functional. So that is my guess. Yeah.
That would be my guess too. I was just curious if there was another reason. And then I was wondering why they want to remove multifamily housing from this as well.
It's been an ongoing big debate going on. And I think there was some, you know, it's some of this is political. And so, you know, the apartment folks and some of the entities were, the ratio of non-functional turf per homeowner, right, is far less in apartments than it is on average than it is in single family homes and those areas. And so, and common areas and things. And so there is just an ongoing debate. They also don't, you know, the homeowner doesn't control that. And so that was also part of the debate, whether that's meritorious or not. That was one of the things that was brought forward. And then just the fact that they're trying to promote apartment, living and that and more density, and thought that visually having established whatever they're established currently in their landscaping is probably worthy of maintaining that. But I will say it's frankly also political.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's all I have. Thank you.
Questions, Jessica? I just have a brief question. Is there any, mention of reservoirs or storage in the bond measures?
Yes, there are. All four of the bond measures have mention of both of those, and they range, I'm peeking right now, but for reservoir operations, and they're all structured differently too, just to note. So some of them include one pocket of funding for dam safety and reservoir operations, like all lumped together. But that ranges from about few hundred million to a billion in them too. And then for water storage, there's surface water storage is mentioned specifically in all of them, with again, a few hundred million. And then one of the comprehensive ones has $100 million. That's what 1567 has to improve everything from soil health, carbon sequestration, and enhanced groundwater and surface supplies. So they vary, but they are mentioned in all of them in some way.
It's good to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure.
Go ahead.
So just one thing I wanted to point out to the committee, Mr. Albiano's report, he mentions the Aqua State Ledge Committee. You guys probably remember last time around, we had nominated Dennis to sit on that committee on behalf of the agency. It's that time of year again.
Okay.
So I didn't have a chance to talk with Mr. Albiano, and he's willing to do that again. So we will be including that for board consideration with all the other committees, and the board can determine if that's the direction they want to go in.
All right. Thank you. All right.
And thank you for your service on that, Dennis. I know it's a lot.
They got a little cantankerous this year, you know. Wow.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick question still on 3. We don't have our local advocate.
When does Kathy start?
Yeah.
She has started.
Okay.
So that was part of the
is that coming
roll out this week, or not this week, but this month, of getting Kathy fully onboarded.
Okay.
She got out of payroll and she's back in payroll in a different context.
Okay.
So we went through that process and got her on board. So she'll be available to do the report now.
Okay. And then were we still pursuing the lobbyist issue that Director Cooper brought up about having an active local lobbyist?
So what we've done is Kathy's going to help in that context. I've also talked to Mr. Brawley about the canceling of his kind of advocacy contract and moving into a potential time and materials contract. Mm-hmm. And so we're still discussing through that when
okay.
we have the opportunity to engage that if we want to do that.
Okay, so that would come back to this committee once you have something ironed out.
Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, that contractual arrangement's under the general manager's authority.
Oh, okay.
So we've basically are reducing the budget to so that the collective of the two things between the staff and UNCAT is a little bit less.
Okay. All right. But it is moving forward.
Yes.
Okay. All right. The next one is item 4, which is presented by Cheryl Fowler. And it's a review of 2022 to 2023 grant acquisition and management activities.
Good evening, Chair Goodside and committee members. Tonight we're going, I'm Cheryl Fowler. I'm the I'm sorry. Presenting is not my forte, but I will get through this. So I am the I work in water resources, and I'm going to go ahead and present our grant acquisition activities. So first, we're going to start out with the wide world of grants. As you may know, the grant acquisition process is long and typically overlaps fiscal years. So this presentation will focus on grants awarded in fiscal year 2023, as well as grant agreements executed in 2023. We'll move through federal grants and state grants and then discuss grant applications in process. Well, we'll move on to grants we didn't win, followed by a short preview of what's coming next. to wrap it all up, there's a summary of grant funding from fiscal year 2021 through fiscal year 2023, and a summary of current grant acquisition efforts. Next slide, please, Uni. So this slide is an overview of the grant acquisition process and timing. First comes the issue of the funder's notice of funding opportunity. We'll call that a NOFO, at which time we match up planned projects to the funding opportunity requirements. We then engage a grant consultant to assist with application preparation. The consultant works with staff to collect information and documentation required for the application, provides a draft application for staff's review and refinement. Once the application is finalized and submitted, we wait with fingers crossed for a funding decision. Once an award is received, we begin the grant agreement process. At this time, we can fine-tune the project cost, scope of work, deliverables, etc. As you can see, the process from NOFO to grant agreement can take up to a year. Once a grant agreement is executed and the funder has accepted our CEQA MEPA documentation, the project can begin construction. It's here where we switch from grant acquisition to grant management. Most grants have a 3-year window to complete the project. However, completing a project within the designated timeframe is the exception rather than the rule. Grant management includes progress reporting, invoicing for reimbursements on a schedule set by the funder, grant amendments as necessary, then project and grant closeouts, followed by submission of annual post-project completion reports for a predetermined number of years. So depending on how the projects progress within a grant, grant management activities can continue for many years on each grant. Next slide, please. Funded at $1.4 million, the Rosedale Phase 2 wells project would install 2 new wells and pumping equipment, which would add 5,000 acre feet per year of first priority pumping capacity to recover from our Rosedale Rio Bravo water banking program. At the time of the application, the estimated project cost was $2.9 million. I want to note that I'm going to give you this information, but when we do the grant applications, we are in the infancy of the project, and a lot of factors go into what the final cost estimates are. So these probably are not accurate estimates for where we are now. Next slide, please, Uni. This $2 million grant funds our phase one AMI project, which replaces 21,000 meters with AMI capable meters and connects 11,000 existing AMI capable meters to a data transmission system. This project will enable remote transmission of customer usage data to SPV Water. At the conclusion of the project, affected customers will be able to access their water usage data in near real time through a customer engagement portal. Studies have shown that this type of project typically results in up to 15% reductions in customers' water usage. At the time of application, the estimated project cost was $8.4 million. Next slide, please, Uni. Awarded a $5 million grant, the S-Wells PFAS Treatment and Disinfection Facility Project installs PFAS treatment and disinfection facilities at wells S6, S7, and S8, restoring up to 9,678 acre feet per year of groundwater to our service area. The estimated project cost here is $16.4 million. Next slide, please, Uni. This $2 million Water Smart WEEG grant, and WEEG is a water energy and efficiency grant program, will fund part of our conservation rebate program. And that includes lawn replacement for residential, large landscape and commercial customers, high efficiency irrigation devices, smart irrigation controllers, multifamily apartment retrofits, including toilet rebates and conservation checkups, as well as residential and commercial conservation checkups. At the time of the application, the estimated project cost was $7.2 million. Next slide, please, Uni. So the California Department of Water Resources Integrated Regional Water Management Grants, and that's a mouthful, are multi-project grants, which typically include the agency's projects as well as projects from non-agency stakeholders. the SCV Water is a grantee, is responsible for grant administration across all projects. And grant administration is funded here at $250,000. The Sand Canyon Sewer Line Relocation Project relocates a sewer line outside of the Santa Clara River, reducing the possibility of contamination from a sewage spill. This project is funded at $1.8 million, and the cost estimates on the project are $5.5 million. The TMU Wells PFAS Treatment Facility will install a centralized PFAS treatment disinfection facility to treat wells T7, U4, and U6. Restoring up to 550,000 acre feet per year of groundwater to our local water supply. This project is funded at $1.5 million. Project costs are estimated at $16 million. There's additional funding that we'll get to later to cover some of these costs. The non-agency projects under this grant include the City of Santa Clarita's Via Princesa Stormwater Infiltration Project, funded at $4.9 million. And LA County's Hazlitt Canyon Stormwater Capture Project, funded at $2.4 million. Next slide, please, Uni. So the DWR Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant of $5.3 million will help the SCV GSA fill data gaps to improve our understanding of the basin for even better long-term sustainability and planning. The work under this grant includes groundwater sustainability plan implementation, installation of deep monitoring wells, and additional desktop work to understand the existing private wells in the basin. This is a 100% grant with no agency cost share, and the estimated project cost, therefore, is $5.3 million. Next slide, please, Uni. So this $1 million in directed state funding was championed by Assemblywoman Pilar Schiavo through Assembly Bill 102 and signed into law under California's Budget Act of 2022. The project will focus on Arundo removal and management. Staff is currently working with area stakeholders on a scope of work for the project. So now we'll move on to applications in process. The following grant applications are in process through the State Resources State Water Resources Control Board, we'll call them the State Board. If I had a crystal ball, I might say that we have a 95% chance of success at securing this funding, but there's always that other 5%, so don't quote me on that. So we're back to the TNU wells. Because the agency is doing a good day and doing a good deed, bringing a reliable water source to Lark Ranch, a disadvantaged community, the State Water Resources Control Board is rewarding our efforts in the form of a $1.1 million incentive grant. This funding will be used for construction of the TNUL's PFAS treatment facility. In addition to the State Water Board, the State Water Board's intended use plan made EPA emerging contaminants funding available to the agency. This federal award was originally estimated at $5 million, but has increased to $8.4 million for the TNU Wells PFAS project. Cumulatively, between all state and federal grant funding sources, the TNU Wells PFAS project is anticipated to receive approximately $11 million in grant funding. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is a new Mint Association water distribution system. Anticipated award is $4.3 million. Under the State Board's Expedited Drinking Water Grant Program, this project met the State Board's criteria for consolidating small water systems that are not able to comply with health and safety standards due to lack of resources. SCV Water will construct a new public distribution system to serve 70 residential lots, including required fire hydrants and appurtenances. Because this project serves a smaller disadvantaged water system, a state-assigned grant consultant is assisting with the application at zero cost to SCV Water. The project cost and anticipated grant is $4.3 million. Next slide, please, Uni. This recycled water project brings access to recycled water to commercial customers, including College of the Canyons, Valencia Golf Club, Vista Valencia Golf Course, and several HOAs along the project's route. We anticipate an award of $3.2 million from the state board. Just a note, this recycled water project also received a $3 million grant under the Prop 1 Round 1 IRWIN grant award for a total of $6.2 million in grant funding. The estimated project costs, I believe, are about $12.2 million at this time. Next slide, please. So this is the bad. We don't always win grant awards. State and nationwide competition is high. So, and while I won't go through this whole list, I will highlight a few items. On the FEMA Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, using FEMA's robust benefit cost analysis tool, the Water Tank Earthquake Retrofit Project did not pencil out as a competitive project. Therefore, the application was withdrawn. And now, when life throws you lemons, you make lemonade. So after losing the race on the 2021 WEEG grant for the AMI project, staff attended a debriefing meeting with BOR to find out why our project went unfunded. Using BOR's valuable feedback, we submitted an application for the fiscal year 2022 funding round and secured $2 million in funding for that AMI project. And as one door opens, one door closes, another opens. One project under the unfunded DWR 2021 Urban and Multi-Benefit Grant application, the Santa Clara Hanbi PFAS Treatment Project, was subsequently funded at $3 million as a replacement project under the Prop 1 Round 1 Urban Grant. Next slide, please, Uni. So notices of funding opportunities, both state and federal grants, are issued throughout the year. The agency reviews these opportunities for relevance to planned projects. Two opportunities on the immediate horizon are the BOR Applied Science Grant, which will help fund projects under our resiliency initiative that seek to model surface water and groundwater interactions to better understand how different water management actions may affect our local environment. The second one is, as I believe Pete mentioned, is the fiscal year 2024 Water Smart Drought Response Program. This is the program that funded the S-Wells PFAS project last year, and we will be assessing projects for this new opportunity once the NOFO is released. Next slide, please, Uni. As you can see from this table, the agency has been pretty successful in grant acquisition, securing over $30 million in grant funding over the past three fiscal years. Note that this table only shows grants awarded from 2021 to 2023. The agency is currently managing 11 open grants, with more coming online in the next few months. From 2021 to 2023, grant application consulting costs for both successful and unsuccessful grants was about $215,000. Put into perspective, this expenditure on grant application assistance represents about 0.7% of the funding received. Next slide, please, Uni. The anticipated funding shown above is through the State Water Resources Control Board. These applications are monsters and require project expertise as well as review of and documentation on agency, legal, and financial matters. While I have eyes on these applications, the heavy lifting has been done by engineering, specifically engineers Brent Payne, Orlando Moreno, and Shadi Bader, with the assistance of our Chief Financial and Administrative Officer, Rochelle Patterson. Next slide, please, Uni. So I'd like to close by saying that staff from all departments, engineering, operations, finance, accounting, sustainability, and safety, as well as our management team and our board of directors, contribute to the success of the agency's grant acquisition and management endeavors. I am very proud to work with such a dedicated team. And now I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. I have no public here anymore. Is there any public comment online? There's not. All right, so we will move to director questions and comments. Director Bostein.
Just wanted to thank you for all your hard work
I mean, this is amazing. I don't know why you said you weren't good at presentations. You did a phenomenal job.
Thank you.
So, thank you. Like that's a lot of money to help fund all these very important projects. And how many projects can you take on at a time is kind of, I guess, my biggest question.
Don't ask Cheryl that.
No, you know, I would say that we are taking on these projects and going out and looking for ways to fund them is good. You know, if we can find the funding to help with the projects we're already doing, then that's our goal.
But how many can you actually deal with at a time? Like how many applications can you have? How many plates can you have spinning?
I'll let you know when I get to it.
Oh, wow.
part of what we had done and the board supported this last time, if you recall, was to try and help with some staffing in our department specifically. And so we're getting close to landing some additional help to help Cheryl free up to focus more on this. I think, you know, the big piece that Cheryl walked through, you know, there's the front end side, which is a lot,
right.
But it's not near as much as the back end side. And so your point's well taken is how, you know, there is a limit, you know, unless you staff up and commit to doing this long term. So I think this whole program is a really cool thing for the new agency. You know, we all dabbled individual agencies before and we weren't great necessarily at getting grant funding.
Yeah, this is amazing.
We've made a commitment, the board, the staff, our consultants, right? You heard earlier from our advocates, this is a whole, you know, alignment process that happens to be successful on these things. And so Cheryl's done a tremendous job of not doing grants before, and now we do them, and we do them very well. And it is an all hands thing. I mean, we have to get engineering and operations and financial support. So we'll let you know when we hit that, you know, that threshold of, is it too much and are we going to have to, you know, double down? We're in a very unique period of grant financing, I think. There's a lot of funds available. And so it's nice to be in a position right now to apply and be successful in these things. Will that be the same condition 5 years, 10 years from now? We don't know. We don't know. But right now we're really doing a great job, I think, and the results show it. So
it's very impressive. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. So I agree. I don't think you should have prefaced your presentation by saying that this isn't your strength because you did a fantastic job. So don't do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I have to say, I wrote a little note to myself. So I keep seeing this advertisement come up when I'm on the internet, and it's for a candle. And it said that on the candle, the label says prayers for grant funding. And every time I see it, I think of you. I think that I need to get it for you and get it to you. So, because I think of you as our grant guru. So thank you for this overview. It was really great to kind of get it all together and be reminded of all the balls that we have in the air at the same time. I did have a question on the graphs that we get, or the charts that we get every month, where it says cost of application. Is that the actual cost that the agency who is putting out the RFP charges, or is that like staff or consultant time?
No, that is consultant time.
Okay.
So that is for the consultant time. In addition to that, there is staff time that is not tracked because it is not reimbursed under grants.
Okay. So a few more questions. On the slide that you had about the expanded monitoring in the Upper Santa Clara River Basin, if I'm remembering the name of that correctly, this is more of a question actually for Mr. Cole, is, are we thinking ahead more? And I know there's studies that are going on in our valley that we're doing, and I know there's pilot projects and looking at groundwater storage capability, but are we thinking beyond that to potentially in the future, and this is probably through the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, of kind of moving from just above ground storage to more of underground storage, even within our valley, and looking for funding sources more and more in that direction?
Yeah, we're definitely looking at the groundwater basin and making sure that we are going to operate it sustainably.
Yeah.
And if we can enhance it,
yeah,
we will consider those things too. I think the challenge with our basins is they are tilted.
Yeah.
And so the alluvial flows through the valley. We use what we use, and then it gets reused again, and we reuse that. But eventually, it daylights and it goes out of our basin into the next basin downstream. The Saugus Basin is similar. It has a capacity to hold it a little bit longer, but it's like a big bowl that's tilted still. And so there is a point where you get to diminishing returns. You could put a lot more water in it, and it's just going to continue on downstream. So, but logically, if we kept our area fuller and we could negotiate with partners downstream, because we were doing that, there could be an alignment of cost and benefit, and where they could essentially pay you to do that as well. And so you would both be leveraging, you know, the resource management to the benefit of the larger system. And that's a big thing to try and accomplish, but we're making little inroads in there. The things like with United, the release agreement that we did, it starts having that kind of concept built into it, where each party pays for what they benefit from. And I'm pretty bullish on that, but this effort's really to just continue to study the basin, and we are going to do some of those, you know, tests of trying to potentially maybe put water in and see what it does. And,
yeah,
and there have been some of those tests done in the past also.
Because yeah, the more I feel like I'm hearing more and more that that's the future of where storage is going. And if we've got all this grant funding available and we can use it for things like that, even for pilots, like, let's go for it if we can. So, okay, thank you. Let's see, what else do I have here? This question is more going towards you, Kevin.
Sure.
This is such fantastic information. And I think we all agree, and you made the comment, Director Bronstein, that I feel like we're so ambitious at finding funding, and it helps the ratepayer, because ultimately then less comes out of our budget from the ratepayers, right? And I feel like this would be really good information for the public to know, especially when we're talking about cost ratepayer adjustments. So I'm just wanted to throw it out there, like something to maybe ruminate on, and how can we present this in a simple way that they would understand, but kind of see the breadth of how ambitious the agency is in trying to ultimately save ratepayer money through grant acquisition. So I just wanted to throw that up to you.
And if I may, that is definitely part of the strategy of outreach as we get more towards groundbreaking and construction and ribbon cutting at the end, and telling that story through the construction life of the project to say, here's an update on this project that's grant funded by
Good.
To make that part of it. When we do have large awards or, you know, coming from the government, from Assemblywoman Schiavo, we put out separate pieces on those because they're not quite tied to anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
But for ones like the wells project and PFAS treatments, those are ones that we will tell that story and plant those seeds so we get to rate studies. Then we've got that out in the community already.
Awesome. Good. So you're ahead of me. next is, so I know we just approved a project that included some money from the Inflation Reduction Act. And so I'm wondering, is there more to tap into through the Inflation Reduction Act that we can take advantage of as part of, you know, the climate resiliency portion of the plan?
Which project are you referring to?
The battery storage project.
Okay.
$700,000 for that.
Yeah.
Well, I believe some of the EPA funding that we're getting through the State Water Resources Control Board was made available through the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's nothing that we can. So that funding is funding grant opportunities, and then we apply for the grant opportunities.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, and it kind of gets like rebranded. That's why you don't.
Right. You don't hear it.
It gets rebranded into like WEAG or something like that, which are the agencies taking those resources and then actually putting the grant programs together that we access.
So I guess it would be nice to know that when it comes to the board level, so we kind of see the flow from which federal to the state and how we got re- I would like to know that. That would be good to know.
Do a better job of doing that linkage.
Okay, thanks. And then, so I'm wondering for you, Cheryl, if you've had the opportunity, and I don't know if other agencies do this with each other, where you've had the opportunity to sit in on a grant review board who approves, like, you know, one that we're not a part of, so it's separate. Only because, so I used to, when I worked full-time for the county, I did grants too, but it was interesting because I've had the perspective on both sides of the table, so I was part of the grant writing group and grant management group, but then I also was called in to be on review boards to review other grant applications for a project that I was not involved in, and I found it to be really, really helpful because you learn the little tidbits of what the reviewers are looking for. And you may already know this because you've been doing it a while, but I just throw it out because if maybe you know of another agency who's going through and they need people to review grant applications. And if you have the time, I don't want to overburden her. Just an idea for, because it could be helpful just to gain that perspective. So I just wanted to.
Director Armitage, that is a very interesting comment. At this point, I do not have the time to do it, but if it ever comes up, that's something that I would be interested in looking to see how other agencies handle their grants.
But yeah. What is similar, Cheryl, you can share with them, and it was in your presentation about the debriefing.
Right.
Yeah.
So we do, every time we lose a grant, we do a debrief with the grantor agency, and they go through and tell you, you know, where your application was good, how it was scored, where it was deficient, and they help you with, you know, what you could do to improve it in the future. So that's been very helpful. And then going through, you know, other grants that have been made available that we can read from our consultants. So we can look at that as well. So.
All right. And then just lastly, great job. It's always so refreshing to see how much effort is put into this. And again, because I think that takes the burden off the ratepayers more, which we're ultimately always striving for. So thank you for all you do. And thank you for giving credit to the other team members. And it's always great to see the collaboration happening between all the departments. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Director Colley?
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up actually on your earlier question about staff time. We have the rough figure on consulting that you were able to generate, but either Cheryl or Mr. Cole, really roughly, you know, the people that are involved, would you say, you know, spend 10% of their time on grant support in some manner, 5%? Some people do 50%, some do none. People that work on grant.
I think it's really lower than that. Cheryl, you can weigh in
here. Yeah, it's much lower than that. Typically, what it is during the application period, the project manager will actually spend the most time on it because he has to write the scope of work and things like that. Then when we get the grant application draft, I will go through and parse it out to people. You know, is there something that has to do with our supply or something that has to do with PFAS? And I'll send it to Sarah or Mike Elward, and they'll review that portion. So maybe an hour or two on their reviews for that. And then once a grant application is done, they're done. And the only work that is completed after we get a grant agreement is the reporting that is required by the project manager. In the course of business, that's invoices, and they have to write a short report every reporting period to just talk about the progress of the project. So that's about what it is. But there are a lot of people who are involved in that. So I would say maybe staff hours per grant application, not counting the project manager or me, would be roughly 20.
Okay.
Okay.
Total, not ongoing.
Yeah. Right, total per grant application, yes.
Okay, and then the ongoing report, I mean, a project manager should be doing project management anyways, so yes. They're packaging the paperwork, and then we hand that off to a consultant to submit, or they package it so that it can go in directly?
No, so what happens is the consultant asks for, they give them a sample report, they fill out the report, and then they provide all of the deliverables, which may be contracts, RFPs, all of the documentation. They dump it into our consultant's website, and then the consultant goes through and puts the report together, and then they give it to me to review. And some of these reports that the consultants are doing on the multi-project grants can be 3,000 pages.
Yeah.
So it's a significant amount of work, but all of the project manager is doing is providing information on his project that he's managing.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
I have a quick question for you, actually. The Soledad sewer line, removing it from the river, wasn't that something that we had an agreement with
Vista?
Yes. Wasn't somebody going to be doing that for us?
There's two components. One is the pump station, which is further up. The developer was going to help with that one. This lower section was the last section that was still on the agency's responsibility. The sewage from that development does not flow through this section. And so there wasn't a linkage to benefit.
Okay. In the upstream, was that, I said Vista, but was it B?
Spring
one. Okay. Yeah. Is that still
German? You're getting a lot of the right names. Yeah. There's B and Tick, but this was Spring.
Is it still moving or is it dead?
It is fluttering. It has not moved forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But we still have to do our part.
Yep.
Oh. Maybe we should still remove the sewer line from the river.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
All right. This concludes item 4. We will move on to item 5, Communication Manager's Report.
Good evening. Thank you for the time. I just have quick updates on the 4 items that I listed out in the agenda. First, on the strategic plan, the staff last week, finished up their SWOT workshops with Ed Means, and we'll have that board workshop in early September, followed by a public engagement component that we're developing with Ed and with the executive team for what that looks like to get public input and feedback as the plan goes forward. The Water Academy, we talked about last month, and an update on that. We were working on different schedules from September through the end of the year, and it looks like we finally have found a couple dates in November that we're going to have the Water Academy. So that will be 3 evening sessions that'll last from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. It'll start on November the 1st, which is a Wednesday. Then it will be the following Thursday the 9th, back to Wednesday on the 15th. And then that final Saturday, November 18th, will be a tour in the morning at Rio Vista. The goal this time is to expand that cohort to 30 instead of 20, and we'll start advertising and recruiting community members in September, starting with those who applied last time that were not made part of that first group. So we'll have the materials for that recruitment ready to review and send out next week, and then we'll start to sign people up for that. In the public events update, staff was recently out at the Concert in the Park in Central Park this past Saturday, with the table passing out information on conservation and rebate programs and really agency literature. The biggest takeaways that we got is a lot of people took information on the ratepayer assistance program. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of that information out there and a lot of rebate program flyers. We talked about that last month, of which rebates we have available. So that was this past Saturday. And we also had our water station set up in the park as well. So that was received well. Our next public event, that's a large city event, is the River Rally on the 16th of September. And that is going to be 2 components for us. One is we'll have a presence there for outreach, and we'll pass out information and giveaways to the folks who are registered. We also have a team of employees that have signed up to wear SED water shirts and hats and and go out as a group in the river. And that event is going to be on the 16th. I don't have the time written down. I believe it's 10 in the morning. It might be a little bit earlier, but it's at the Newhall Community Center. And so there's a couple hours there we'll be out in the river. Just yesterday, we finished a sponsorship agreement and signed an agreement with the City of Santa Clarita for events and participation for the agency. So that we've talked about in the past of trying to get more visibility at River Rally. It's a natural tie-in for the agency. So in addition to a River Rally sponsorship where we will have co-branding on printed materials and outreach items starting next fall, because we're too late in the game for all the printed stuff this fall, we'll get activation booths at Light Up Main Street, which is about 10,000 folks come to that event in November. The Cowboy Festival is a two-day event that draws roughly 15,000 between the two events, the 2 days, and then one concert in the park for each of the next 3 years. So we've got a three-year agreement with them from 2023's Light Up Main Street until 2026's River Rally. And so we're looking forward to putting together different activation opportunities and being more present, more visible at those community events. And lastly, on my update, I have CIP outreach as part of the agenda. I just want to give an update. We sent out a postcard to folks along the Lark and Lily of the Valley project line that may want to buy into the system that aren't part of those two communities. We have a full packet of information going to those residences and businesses. I believe it's 40 individual properties this week. So they will have that information on how they can get involved in the project, what the cost will be, what grant funding is available for them, and move that project along. We also have upcoming outreach work on the Dickinson and Smythe pipeline projects, first for Dickinson Drive. It turns out that the first week that they're shooting for to start that project at the beginning of October lines up with both of Valencia High School and Legacy Academy's fall break. So that first week of work is right, that sweet spot of not impacting.
Fall break is 1 day.
Fall break is 1 day.
Yeah. I was like, how did they get a week?
Valencia, it's a week.
No.
On the district calendar, it shows me a full week off.
Thanksgiving is a full week now. Okay, so two different things. Fall break is 1 day. But for those of us that with elementary school kids, fall break used to be a week. In high school and junior high, it's 1 day. But they did, a couple years ago, change it so that the week of Thanksgiving now is fully off. So it's Thanksgiving week, because when we see fall break, we think of that 1 day early
time.
The timing
that you said is, not... Oh, and
snap. Sorry, I got the wrong one. Let me check, because I was looking at the calendar before with the construction. This he has a full week of fall break.
That might be right. I don't know the calendar. So.
So at least that, they are off.
Those 10 kids are not
going to be. The project is going to be overnight, though, anyway.
Yeah.
So we're working with the district and with Valencia specifically on that.
Well, they'll understand since their football field is delayed. And then, so, you know.
It'll be up in September, I think. I was listening to the school board.
Just talk supply chain delays. We are very sorry. And they will have already heard supply chain delays.
We've been in contact with them weekly. Here's what the update is. We have a weekly meeting on Thursdays with the contractor. So we've got that schedule now. And then working with the two sites, as well as the businesses in that shopping center, but mostly the schools are concerned about. We also have a project coming up for a pipeline replacement at Valencia Marketplace in Stevenson Ranch. Mm-hmm. That'll go from Walmart up through the parking lot. So we're working on getting those business owners together and the property management group to coordinate whatever their delivery schedules are and mitigate any impacts on that.
Nighttime as well for that.
That's what I understand in the off hours, but we're also working through what access considerations are. Is it right in the middle? What can we work around? So we're trying to get that scope and what that would look like so we can communicate that out. And then we've just started work on getting out information for the Dean Tank project in Canyon Country for a public meeting and flyers and outreach. We're just waiting to lock down what that construction schedule would be at the end of September, early October for that outreach. But that's something that we're starting to put information on.
That's is that on Sand Canyon?
That is over.
It is like
sand. Yes. Yeah, it's in that area.
It's lovely. I get to look at them destroying my mountain. Mm-hmm. Right. But,
It's over by Mitchell Elementary School. Yes, yeah, Sand Canyon, between Sierra Highway and Sand Canyon, north of Soledad.
Yeah. It's a pretty mountain.
That concludes my report. Thank you.
All right. Then you get to do another presentation on the committee planning calendar.
Public comment.
We have no public comment here. Not online, so go. I always have something to say. Sorry. Thank you for your update. For the information going out to the people along the Lark and Lily of the Valley line that's being installed, is there going to be an in-person information session for them?
At this point, that's not been planned. At this point, we're trying to beat the rush of there's a certain timeline to get grant funding from the state to see how much funding is available and what can be included in the bid process for materials and scope of work. So trying to get an initial interest from those folks. We are going to set up a public meeting. I believe that deadline is the end of September. So we don't have anything in person. We are going to have a virtual meeting just in terms of getting something on the calendar quickly before that deadline. That's going to be in mid to late September, and it's going to invite the entire community. We anticipate folks who are not along that route would not be eligible to still come and ask questions. Okay. So we have all of that information available, and we have the principal engineer and other folks in engineering that would be on that call and making that presentation of here's what the project is. If you have questions about the application, how to get involved, here's how you do that, but also answering any questions that might come up of, well, I live here. How come I can't do that? They would have that.
Okay. So there will be a virtual meeting in
September. We've built a web linkage. So if you get a question or something, just point them to the website. It's got the frequently asked questions, contact information, all of this.
Okay. No, I just think at some point it would be good to have an in-person meeting for people to come in. Or a virtual, if people can tap in virtually.
There is a virtual meeting that is scheduled for September.
Okay. In person. Perfect. River Rally, I was confused because on the tracking sheet for the sponsorship, it says that there isn't the ability to provide a refill station.
So that will be one that we have to determine when we are at the site.
Okay.
We are always tentative just to make sure that the connection is good and running and that it's at part of the event footprint where it's feasible to not run in miles of hose out.
Because the only reason I ask is because Green Santa Clarita is already promoting for people to bring their reusable water bottles, and I was so excited to see that. I was like, that's awesome.
It's just a matter of testing the connection, which we do I believe 2 days in advance to make sure that everything is good.
All right, sounds good. What else? I love the effort to increase our presence at city events with the increased sponsorship with the city. I think that's fantastic. It's a no-brainer because we all serve the same population and there's so much opportunity for cross-pollination of information with them. So, and then I love that we're in concerts with Park. That's really cool. And I think the Taylor one was the best because you probably have the youngest crowd there. So in the future, I think if we could target like the ones that draw the younger crowds, like that's the way to go. So that's good. Another idea I had is, so I've seen Metropolitan has partnered with Tree People to give out little wildflower seed packets that also it's through Measure W. It has like Measure W logo on it. And it's with the Tree People. And then I think Met just put a sticker on the back with their website for water conservation. And I'm like, I wonder if they'd be willing to give us some to throw onto our table too, with a sticker on where they can go for the rebate programs and stuff. So I'm just throwing up for.
That is something that I'm familiar with at the city. They've done that in the past. They've had seed packet giveaways. So that's
something we can learn more about. Just make sure they're California native. All right. And then what else? I'm almost done. I saw the email go out for the Bridgeport Pocket Park ribbon cutting. And so the questions I have about that is, will any of the school kids be invited to attend and be part of that ceremony?
So Yes, it's not all of the school kids.
No.
And it's a Friday at 10 a.m.,
yeah,
which was identified by the principal of this is the best time to have it.
Okay.
They have a green team that includes some students and faculty and staff,
yeah,
that is invited and part of the event.
Yeah.
So we would hope that representatives of the school, that has been our ask from the schools to release some of the kids to come out.
Yeah,
nice. Well, if it's a recess or if it's, you know, something that they can bring the class out.
Yeah.
Let them through the gate over there.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And then just the only idea that I had around that was, do we want to invite like the Theater Paint Foundation executive director, or let's let them know, because I know we're promoting native plants and I think it's good for them to know that we're really pushing that up here in the Santa Cruz Valley. Because in my head, I kind of have this vision for eventually they would come up and do like day events to bring some plants up for customers or for, you know, people to come and
just
buy from them.
To drive there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. That's the barrier for some people driving down to Sun Valley. So if they could like have pop-up events, I don't know, maybe twice a year or something where they come up maybe in the fall, like fall and spring, and they bring some plants and I don't know where it would happen. I haven't thought about the logistics, but you know, so I think continuing to build that partnership with them, I think would be really nice.
Repeat their names, like
Theodore Payne Foundation, your executive director, Evan something.
So I do know that our conservation group has contacts that they're inviting.
Okay.
I mean, our group in communications is all the elected officials, the school, the Bridgeport community. The conservation team with Matt Dickens is reaching out to certain partners. Mm-hmm. So I can check with him that.
Okay. Yeah, I would just say them and
I'm
maybe
just not sure.
All the nurseries.
Yeah.
Right? All the nurseries.
But yeah.
I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure who
yeah.
has reached out to or who they're planning to.
Yeah.
Hey,
okay.
We want to be able that we want to sell these plants, right?
Yeah.
People to be able to.
And then maybe our environmental group partners, the Sierra Club, Citizen Climate Lobby,
yeah,
and Scope. Those are the three that come to mind. So I think it would be nice to extend invitations to them too. So I'll let you handle that with Matt then.
Probably okay. A pretty good list on our web too of interested parties. A larger group of environmentalists. There was the environmental participation on our web.
And then what about like Aqua Region 8 comms people? Is this something that it's probably a half hour event? So I don't know. I just feel like this is something different, right?
Well, it's something we can write a story for.
Okay.
We do that periodically on projects.
Okay.
Unique.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I think people would want to know like that there's agencies doing this. So it would be great if it wasn't the day before Labor Day weekend. But.
No, I think we may lose people because of that.
Yeah, but anyhow, great. Yep, thank you.
Yeah,
fantastic. That's very exciting. That's opening.
Any other director questions or comments on this?
I have a quick question based off of what Director Armitage reminded me. The water filling station.
Yes.
So I know that in the past, Director Orzechowski actually was curious about the number of the float. Like, are we tracking to see how much we're filling up? Things like that?
No. And
okay.
As far as I know, that's not something that staff is doing up there to see how much water is being used. I'm sure they can.
Yeah, because I know that he's asked in the past.
I had talked. We can talk about it offline.
Okay.
I talked to Keith about just putting a meter on it.
I wonder if you could add it to the sustainability report for like, you know, the number. I don't know what the formula would be, but the number of single-use plastics that we're eliminating for, you know, in being used by.
Bear in mind, all the parks have bottle refilling stations already. So I don't know. We can say the station did this, but if they're not using the station.
I think it was more like the cowboy event, you know, things like, right? Because
the parks have the bottle.
It was on Main Street.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Stuff like, if it's on Main Street, but like the community center has a filling station. So like, we don't know where people are going. We don't know if it would be all our water.
I mean, well, because
the station doing it or like,
yeah,
potentially everyone there could bring a bottle and fill it somewhere,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to we're not handing out bottles anymore, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wording would be important to say
the fill station.
Yeah, the fill station. But not implying that if they didn't use the fill station, they're bad people.
Yeah.
Because they could fill somewhere else.
I'm just saying to show that it's worth the investment too, because in the future, if we have to go buy a new refill station or we want to upgrade the refill station, it'd be nice to have some data and say we've used it, you know, we've replaced this many water bottles by using that. I don't know.
For mobile things. Yeah, for mobile things, it definitely has a use. Yeah. Okay. Got that note? Any other?
I'm good.
That's good. Okay. Nothing. Okay. Terrific. Okay. Well, let's go on to item 6.
The planning calendar.
Yes.
So we have been looking, Steve and I have been looking at upcoming meetings to try to fill our agendas with useful reports and see if there are opportunities to cancel some where we have lighter schedules. So originally at the October 19th meeting, would have proposed to have our education programs highlights. Our education program gets back to in-school and field trip services in September. So what I propose is to move their event, their presentation up to September, in addition to the legislative consultant reports, and then propose canceling the October 19th meeting. The reason being is that the state is out of session at that time. So they're actually finishing session the 14th, so that 21st meeting would be a wrap-up meeting for the state lobbyists, and then the 19th would be very light. So we have proposed to cancel October 19th. And then looking at December the 21st, there would be an opportunity for the federal lobbyists, the federal advocates to present there as the Senate and House go on break the week before for the Christmas holiday and end-of-year holidays, and they're back in session the start of the new year. But seeing the proximity to Christmas holiday on the 25th, we would propose that as the only things that were on the proposed agenda were the consultant reports and the communications manager report. We didn't have a separate presenter scheduled for that date. So those will be two proposed changes to the planning calendar for the next few months. We've not looked past the end of the calendar year yet.
Okay. So I was going to ask if we would be open to switching the canceled meeting from October to September. So keeping the September date, but canceling the October date. Just because I personally have something that could potentially overlap and I don't want to miss a meeting if I don't have to.
That's what he's saying, to cancel October.
No, cancel. So I'm saying cancel September and keep October. But it sounds like given the state calendar, legislative calendar, I know that's why you were pushing for September, right?
That was the only thought was they're finishing up the week before. And so that would be like a wrap for them.
Yeah. I mean, would it be okay with there to wait another month for the wrap-up report? Does it matter to anybody else if we flipped it and had a meeting September but skipped September but had a meeting in October? I'm sorry, I keep saying it backwards.
It wouldn't bother me. I mean, it seems like there's nothing going to be reported in September that we would be able to influence.
Right, yeah.
Right? And so
correct.
Getting the report a month later of what, you know, a historical report in September or October, it's still historical information that we can't influence. So I don't have a problem with that. It may be even beneficial in that there'd be a more complete report on what has, this is what happened.
Would the governor have signed stuff by the 19th? I forgot what his signing deadline is. We can look at that. I mean, why don't you just see?
14th.
October 14th is the last day for the governor to sign or veto bills.
That might be.
October 19th.
I mean, and is it okay if check if the staff can present?
So
is there a problem with the education?
If the education group does not present, then I will present their update. And I've been having some difficulties getting the information from them as they're all finishing the summer break anyway. More time is not bad for them. And if they're unavailable that day, then I will give their report. They'll produce it, and then I will report out for the feedback.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on this?
Are field trips full already?
That I don't know. That would be part of their thing. Their
presentation.
As the program works, as schools go into their system and register for dates, and those dates start in September. So I don't know if they would have data on that. It would be a review of the last calendar or last school year, and then a preview of here's the programs and our highlights and what we're working on planning for this year, expanding Scout Days and other programs that we're looking for.
Sure. Okay. And then
the program is certainly not undersubscribed. So,
and then there's a list of grants and all that. Is that under this item too, or is it?
We're
it doesn't
on
say
planning calendar now.
That was the last one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to ask why there is the grants that were not successful there from 2015.
It was just providing a history, but we
just a history. Okay, because I was like
more recent. That's preferable.
I mean, unsuccessful applications. I mean,
I think there was a request back.
It was
started when we started investing more effort of like how successful we were. And so at that point in time, we. There wasn't much to report on because there hadn't been much.
I still think that's more helpful to still have that fuller picture. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I was just curious why it was. That's a good, legit reason. It's fine. Don't do anything. Keep it there.
I can do that.
You see? Very helpful.
I also asked staff to look at and think about, I think we'll think about going forward, the timing of the federal and state and local presentations. So some may be more important to hear at certain times of year. And, you know, perhaps when we already have ability to chime in or take action or make a decision versus hearing all three every month, because we don't really do anything with it. We're just hearing presentations that we can read. But if there's things that we need to discuss in more detail, that would give us the time to do it, to not hear.
So for to make sure I'm understanding, so for example, having the state advocates online and giving a report and taking that feedback and questions versus, you know, hey, in the last 2 months, there's really been, they've been on recess, there's been nothing going on. They don't necessarily need to present.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, if the consider staggering them. So, you know, maybe focus on federal 1 month, let state another month. I feel like we do a lot of presenting and we haven't had any action items. So,
but I will say, I find it helpful to, I find the redundancy helpful because there's so much happening, both at the federal and the state level, that it's nice just to be reminded. And I feel like even though I may reread the same information on two different months, sometimes something clicks for me in one time versus the last time I read it, or because I read something else, I now, the puzzle pieces have kind of come together more for me. So I don't know. I just, for me, the way I learn and the way I continue to learn, I don't mind getting the information every month. I think it's helpful.
They still do written reports on their schedule, right? Do they produce? Yeah, they would have the written report every month.
They just wouldn't present.
Yeah,
they wouldn't have their oral report.
And if you have questions, you can still email them.
like you know me, I'm always going to have questions.
Yeah, and you can email them at any time. It's part of their service.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I just I don't see the value in having more than half an hour of presentations and no action items. So I'd rather have it be more focused and see what we can help with. Focus, you know, act things that we need to know about, things that Aqua's taking a position on, grant funding,
coming up. I think
it doesn't seem like there's many action items.
No. Yeah. And that, you know, we need to be cognizant. Cheryl needs to go work on grants. A summary is good, but we need to focus on action, in my opinion. So maybe we can stagger it. Okay.
So, and just so I have this right, in terms of the planning calendar, are we saying we will cancel September 21st, keep October 19th, cancel December 21st?
Sounds fine.
So I can say that. We make sure
that
is
fine.
Is that, do that? Can we get that like disseminated as kind of an official thing?
That's what I'm saying. It's
we'll just redo the schedule. So we're going to
no September.
And then we have October.
Yes, October. Sorry. Yes, November. And then no December. I'm totally free at December. Oh, you guys are late.
You're like,
yeah. You're not good at changing this on my phone.
You need more updated.
April, and she
then it hits your calendar.
An updated calendar.
Yeah, that's what I'm sort of hoping. This is my final opportunity to take the calendar. And the further out we know, the better.
It will come to
so you. So we're not meeting next month, basically.
Yes. So,
right. Just so Ed knows what's going on.
Yeah. No, I figured that out.
You'll get it on your phone magic.
And then you're not going to be at the one that's before Christmas.
No, that wouldn't happen on December 21st at any rate.
You'll be snowmobiling.
I will almost certainly be in Montana at that point.
All right.
And I can also say it's my wife's birthday, so there's another excuse that isn't real.
All right. Well, we've arrived at adjournment. So thank you.